Welcome to Wheelchair Nerds, a podcast to connect and inform people who utilize, prescribe, and provide seating and wheel mobility equipment. I'm your host, Angie Kiger. Before we jump into today's topic, a brief reminder that the information in this podcast is for educational purposes only and is not intended to be medical, billing, or legal advice. Now, let's get to it. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Wheelchair Nerds. Y'all know I like to start podcasts by saying I'm super excited for our guest today. Legit, I am super excited again to be doing another podcast, although it's about a funny topic. We are recording this here in July. And the reason why I say funny is because as a kid, this was the time of year I didn't look forward to. We're starting to get to back to school. So we thought it'd be really cool on Wheelchair Nerds to talk about back to school. What's it like going to school, utilizing a wheelchair? And we have a therapist that's joining us today. We have a mom. We've got a real life student, a freshman in high school joining us. So it's going to be super fun. I hope you guys are ready to learn. I always say this at the beginning of a podcast, you know, just a disclaimer as we talk about this, and we have an official disclaimer at the end, but this is truly just for educational purposes. When Sophia and her mother discuss what they've experienced throughout their life, that's one story. If Aaron, our physical therapist that's joining us, talks about examples of things that's happened that she's seen in her practice, that's just a couple of stories. No one does this journey of life perfect. No one does it wrong. That's the beauty of life, right? So we're going to be talking about everything. So I've said their names. So first off, let's start with a good friend of mine I've known for a number of years. We were just laughing before we started recording, and the fact that when it comes to the world of complex rehab technology, there are so few of us. If you connect with people and you consider yourself a wheelchair nerd, because we do, you just kind of stay friends with those folks. And Aaron and I have been friends for a number of years. So Aaron, who are you? What do you do? Imagine you're writing a bio for like a clinical presentation. Give that to the audience for me.
All right. So my name is Aaron Baker. I am a physical therapist and I work as the assistive technology specialist at Nemours Children's Health here in Orlando. I have been here for 8.5, almost 9 years, and I head up and run our seating and mobility clinic, doing all of our evaluations, recommendations, trials, deliveries, all of the things for all of the equipment. And I absolutely love it. Prior to coming here, the same thing with adults at another hospital in town for 5 years, but I definitely have found my home in the pediatric world. I am happy to be here, and I just love being able to help people with reaching their fullest potential, to give options and opportunities and mobility so that kids can just go out and live life.
Nice. You know, one of the, as you're talking, one of my core memories of coming to Nemours is I remember the Post-it art. Do you remember that? Someone had one of your, I think it was a group of your rehab folks or nurses had done Post-it art on the glass. It's still there.
We have art on our windows in the rehab gym, and they are made of Post-it notes.
That was literally years ago, y'all, like for the audience listening. It's funny. Well, when I come back down to Orlando here in a few weeks, I'll have to like roll by Nemours to see what the art is, see if it's still there. Because I'd imagine in sunny Florida, it gets pretty faded over time. So
it does. We've changed it several times. We keep coming up with new things.
That's hysterical. So Aaron, I'm actually going to flip the script a little bit. You were the one who brought Tiffany and Sophia into this. So do you want to do like a little bit of an introduction of them? Although we'll kind of how do you know them? And, you know, why did you bring them on the podcast? Why do you think they'd be a great story to tell?
So I met Sophia and her mom when they came for therapy. We were doing physical therapy with Sophia, working on her mobility. And in that, we discovered some challenges she was having with her manual wheelchair at the time. So over the years, I have worked with Sophia to help maximize the best we could in her manual chair, help mom and Sophia plan and make steps for her, and then transition into the power chair that she is sitting in today. It's been years that I'm working with Sophia, and I thought she would be great for this because she is a fun young lady who has been through lots of different things between school, different equipment, and just thought that she could be a good, helpful input.
I love it. So Sophia, welcome. Tell me a little bit about yourself. What are exciting things to do 17-year-olds who live in Orlando, Florida? What do you guys like to do? I know you mentioned that you are big into following folks on YouTube. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
I like to do art. I like to have fun, do cheerleading.
Oh, nice.
I like to text my friends. I like to call my friends.
I feel a theme I can very much relate to when I was 17 years old. Friends, 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 right? I'm sure, Aaron, you remember those days of being a teenager. It was all about friends. So yeah, sounds very typical. Tiffany, you feel free to jump in on this question. How long have you guys been in Orlando? Like, are you guys big Disney fanatics? Everyone thinks about Disney when they think about Orlando.
Yes, we love Disney. Sophia, probably the most. I'm okay with a few visits, but she would love to go all the time.
Yes.
All right, so I'm going with my nieces in a few weeks. We're going to Epcot and Magic Kingdom. Those are the two parks that they've picked. What are the top things we must do when we go to Epcot and Magic Kingdom?
Food.
Food.
Well, we'll probably eat.
Yeah. Get a snack.
What's your favorite ride at Disney?
All of them. Yeah,
Epcot's fun to walk around and see the different countries.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's what I loved about Epcot. You're right. Like, there's so many cool things. Like, you can travel the world around Epcot.
A little taste of it all, too.
Yes. All right. So, Tiffany, tell us a little bit about you. I know that you are way more than just a mom. How long have you guys been down in Florida? Do you have any other kiddos? What are some kind of fun things that you and the fam like to do together?
I have been in Florida for a long time. I grew up in Ohio, so Sophia was born here. I came right after college, so the kids are all Floridians. I used to be a nurse. I guess I still am, but I haven't practiced since Sophia was born, so I put that aside and been a mom. And I have two other kids, a 13-year-old daughter and 11-year-old son. And we love to be active and do all kinds of things outside, go to the beach, swim. We just try to do anything that we can do to keep busy outside and away from the screens.
Oh, yes.
Take Sophia and do whatever that we do. We used to like to go camping a lot, hit the parks, just keep busy with their schedules too. I kind of enjoy just living life through their eyes and all their things they're doing to keep busy.
Very cool. All right. So those are our guests, guys. Now we're going to kind of jump into what are we going to talk about on this podcast? So really the purpose of this is for us to chat about the whole range of school. You know, Tiffany, I'm going to probably have to rely on you for a lot of the stuff because, Sophia, I'm guessing you don't remember your first day of school. If you're like me, I can't tell you what my first day of school was like. So we'll have mom kind of talk through that. But Tiffany, when it was time for Sophia to head to school, was preschool first or did you guys head to kindergarten? Like what did that look like for you?
Yes, she did preschool. She did a couple years before she did her 4-year-old preschool, which we call voluntary pre-K here, which is an everyday program. But before that, she started around 2 years old, where she only went 2 or 3 days a week, just for a couple hours. For us, we just chose a place that catered to her. It was a school for children with special needs that she went to for preschool, different than she went to for elementary, though.
Okay.
So they had some experience with children with different needs. So we started off there. Felt more comfortable taking her to a place like that than jumping right into public school. Number one, she was our first child, so I was nervous about all of it anyways. But on top of a disability, I was just not really ready to let her go. You know, it seemed so scary to let her go to the regular public school at that time.
For sure. And if you're okay with it, Tiffany and Sophia, Tiffany, can you tell us a little bit about Sophia in terms of her abilities and then, you know, her disabilities and kind of related to mobility? Diagnosis, if you're comfortable sharing that, all that kind of good stuff.
Yes, Sophia has cerebral palsy. It mainly affects her lower extremities. Her upper extremities are affected as well, but she hasn't been able to walk as her primary mode of transportation. When she was little, she used to crawl in the form of like a bunny hop style crawl, which she was very proficient at, which is not Aaron's favorite way or anything's favorite way of crawling, but she was so good at it and it gave her such independence in the house. She was all over. She could climb up on furniture that way. That was her independence. She did that mostly until we started some practice with a walker and things like that. She was able to do short distances with a posterior walker, but it just never really became that proficient. It was just too much, too labor intensive to ever be like practical for her. So we just used it as a form of keep practicing, exercise, that type of thing until we moved her to a wheelchair. We used a child stroller for a long time and that's how she got around. So yeah, she's very bright and verbal and
I love it.
What else, Aaron? Okay. When I live with someone so close, you kind of, you know, it's like I'm so used to how she is. It's hard to describe.
Well, another question, this could be for Aaron or for Tiffany or for Sophia. We have to talk about, so previously in my life, I did 10 years of clinical education and educated a lot of therapists on pediatrics. I came from working prior to that 10 years, 12 years in a pediatric hospital. And one of the things that we always talk about is, you know, you mentioned, Tiffany, moving from a stroller to a wheelchair. And Erin, this could be something that would be good for you to talk about, is school age a lot of times, you know, when kids are starting kindergarten, starting preschool, is that when, you know, you start talking about that with them? Do you plant those seeds early? Because I'm sure as a mom, and I remember hearing this from folks, I'm not a mom myself, but as a mom, Tiffany, you've probably heard, you know, it was probably a struggle or something to kind of wrap your brain around that this was going to be it. So
very hard for, you know, families to accept and wrap their head around my child in a wheelchair right off the bat, especially because we're often seeing them when they are still very small. So a stroller initially is a great way to start. But I do like to have that conversation with families early. So at 2 and 3 years old, hey, are you looking at enrolling your child into early school for, you know, early intervention services? And if so, then, you know, we should probably start looking at and talking about more of a traditional wheelchair. And I try and put it as an age-appropriate mobility device. Mm-hmm. We want these children to be sitting at the same level as their peers, able to be at the same tables and levels as their same age peers. And you can't do that from a stroller. You're typically up higher, up above. You don't get that same interaction. So by helping to encourage and have families understand that at school aged, even those early school years, having them down lower in a device that they could potentially move themselves and interact with their classmates is really huge, not just for mobility, but for that social interaction and that development.
Yes. Tiffany, any thoughts on that? I mean, you think back to when Sophia went into her first chair. How was that experience for you and your husband to really kind of process and make that decision? Was it difficult, or was it something you were like, yep, this is something we need to explore?
Yeah, I think in our case, we really waited too long to get her a manual chair. I think in the beginning, we were really, as I said, she was our first child. So we just were trying to do everything right. And we just held out hope for so long that she may be able to walk and use the walker. And we had, I think, a lot of other people encouraging that thought. So we were kind of anti-wheelchair for a while. We just thought it'll just make her not want to try to practice walking or use the walker once she finds an easier way. But looking back, I really see that we should have probably given her that experience to learn her environment, experience her world, get the independence, spatial awareness, so many things. I wish we would have done that sooner, but ultimately we did get her a chair. She was around 7 years old before she got a chair. She was small, so she didn't fit in the stroller for a long time. By that time, we were ready. We were okay with it. We're like, she needs to be able to have this independence to be off the floor, like you said, up at the level where the rest of your peers are, not go to someone's house anymore, and she still crawls, you know. Mm-hmm. She just outgrew that and was ready.
Sophia, do you remember when you got your first wheelchair?
No.
Nope. So your memories of every time you've been at school has been in a wheelchair?
Ever since I grew up.
Ever since you grew up. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, 7 years old, if you're like me, especially as I get older, my memories of childhood are fast escaping me. You know, so Tiffany, you mentioned that Sophia was in a preschool-based program. As you were deciding, kind of looking at where she was going to go to kindergarten, what did that process look like for your family as you were walking through that, trying to decide what's the best school?
Right. We looked into and went to visit the local public school to see what they would be able to offer with her disability. And for us and where we lived at the time, that particular school wasn't very open or welcoming or warm about the idea. Mm-hmm. And that kind of put us off immediately. Mm-hmm. They wanted to send her to another school that was about a 45-minute bus ride in the county. And rather than try to include her in her own neighborhood school, they just kind of looked at the paper, never met her in person, and decided this is going to be too much. So we went on to a private school that is for children with specifically motor disabilities, like mostly CP or other disorders like that. So we just decided to do that. We felt safe there. And it was primarily focused on physical development. The academics were not that strong. But at that age, we were still holding out hope that if we do this, and they really focused on functionality, that we could give her the tools that she needs to be independent, and we can always catch up on academics later. So we did that for kindergarten through third grade. Mm-hmm. Before we transferred to public school.
It's not an uncommon scenario, unfortunately, that you hear about. I was like I was telling you, both of you guys, at one point in my career, when I was still working out of the hospital, I also had a part-time consulting job and did assistive technology evaluations for school system, one of the school systems up here, DC Public Schools. And I would do assistive technology evaluations as a consultant. Also did some kind of a fun fact. I did AT evaluations for some of our State Department kiddos, families that were away when they came back from whatever country they were in. I would do the school evals for them too. And it's definitely very individualized when it comes to choosing what's the best program for a child. Mm-hmm. I can also, you know, think back to when I worked at the hospital. I worked with a young lady. I can't say, well, she's a young lady now. She was just a little itty bitty when I first met her. She has a diagnosis called spinal muscular atrophy type 1. I remember when it was time for Kay to go to school, there was a battle about whether or not the school wasn't going to accept her, which one it would be. Now, she was in a power wheelchair on a ventilator. We recognize that that is a lot for a school to kind of really process if they've our neighborhood school to be like, oh my gosh, how are we going to have this child fit into the mix? And there were multiple meetings that we had and really kind of explaining that, hey, we can, you know, get the school to be accessible. I actually continued on with her after she long after she discharged and picked her back up a few years later as a consultant again, seeing her at school. And they actually did a fair job, but there was definitely the obstacles of, well, what if something goes wrong? So Erin, what are some of the resources you have for families? Because I'm sure if your clinic is anything like mine, your experience in pediatrics is a lot of times we were more than just the folks who provided the technology. We also were a little bit of a social support, if you will, for resources. So
yeah, so I work with a lot of these kids in other departments in the hospital as well. So if possible, help them get set up with a social worker or a caseworker who can help connect with resources in the community. I have reached out and spoken to schools and largely for like transportation issues and things, trying to help with figuring out how we can accommodate kids on a bus with their different types of equipment or what transportation will look like. I love that Tiffany actually went and visited the schools. I, you know, think that's a great thing to do. Actually go see the space, talk to them in person so that you're not just another name on a piece of paper. But to really have them understand who you are, who your child is, what the needs are, and be able to talk them through, okay, here's really what we need. It may not be near as much or, you know, exhausting or overwhelming as the school may think that mm-hmm. it could be. You may not need all of the things that they're picturing in their head when they go, oh, we can't handle this. We need to send you to another school, because that is a huge imposition on a family. To say, oh, sure, well, we can send your kid to this other school where we have all these services for you. But now that's 45 minutes, like Tiffany said, or longer. I have kids that spend hours a day on a bus going between their home and the school, and that's not good for anybody. Or the family is left having to transport their child these greater distances, which if you have working family, that becomes very challenging. So I definitely encourage that people try and communicate well with the school if they're open to it. Of course, you're going to run into those places that are difficult and don't want to take the time and effort. And unfortunately, that kind of thing is out of everybody's hands. And we do the best that we can to help advocate for our kids, you know, and encourage people to work with us.
That's exactly one of the reasons why we wanted to have this podcast, is to really help folks who are listening to this, especially if you have a child or you're working with children and they're headed to school. It's about that time, you know, what should I do? I always recommend to folks, of course, there are various resources the Department of Education has online related to the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act that's available. IDEA is out there. Looking specifically into not just from the federal level, looking at the state level, and also specifically within your county or city. I think for what resources that I have seen, literally, so I live in the DC metro area. These guys are aware of this. I think a lot of folks listen to our podcast have heard me say this. Up here, I literally live within like 2 or 3 miles of different school systems and different cities and jurisdictions and whatnot. And all of them function just a tad bit different. You know, I am lucky in the fact that I've got friends who are special educators that I can, you know, touch base with. I've got a good friend of mine who is a retired educator who's now on the school board for one of our local school systems. And so it's just, you know, it's been interesting as I talk with families and learn more about what happens up here. It's like anything when it comes to anybody that is different or with a disability, I feel like there's constant education and advocacy that has to happen by the family, by the child too, you know, speaking up. And Tiffany, you mentioned that one of the fears that you guys had, she's your baby. She's your first baby. You know, you're sending her off to school. What were some of the, I guess, the things that you remind Sophia of when she's headed to school? Like, are there things that you review with her as far as speaking up for herself?
Yes. Well, when she was really small, you know, and we knew where she was, the place, we were very comfortable and they had one-on-one assistance and we're very interactive with them. So we felt pretty comfortable, but we've always encouraged her to make sure you speak up, tell the teacher what you need. She used to be afraid to say if she was uncomfortable or her AFOs were hurting. So I'd work with her on that and also let the teacher know that if she's not always speaking up, can you kind of remind her or ask her throughout the day if she's doing okay, and just work with the teacher and her to help her advocate. Mm-hmm. But then as she's gotten older, she's able to do that much better. And I'm also able to ask her, lucky I'm able to ask her about her day and what's going on. And she tells me everything. So in some cases, the child's not always able to verbally say how things are going. That would be another huge challenge. But yes, I always try to talk to her about the way she can advocate for herself, speak up for her needs and not be afraid.
Absolutely. You know, another thing, this might sound kind of funny, I encourage folks to also, you know, school systems are now on social media. Follow the individual schools, like go on there and read on Twitter, go see what some of their programs look like. Some of them are, you might be like, oh, bare bones, I found like one or two posts. But then there's some other schools that I found even within the city up here that I live in, like some of the schools will post all sorts of things. So it's great to see that community of what is happening out there. And then I also would recommend to families is really building that community. One of the most unique situations I've ever been in, Fairfax County is one of the counties I live near and one of the largest counties in the state of Virginia. I got asked to speak at an early intervention support group. So it was for families of children that had kids in early intervention. I remember I walked into this room and there were like 30 parents there. I'm like, holy moly, I thought this was like, I didn't realize this was going to be so big. And then as I looked around the room, I actually saw a friend of mine that I grew up with. Long story short, I knew that her son, who has disabilities, was way older than 0 to 3, right? I'm like, what is happening? And the more I engaged with him and found out that this group was a group of families that they never graduated anybody out on purpose because they found the mentorship from the parents who had kids that were now in high school was super helpful for the parents that were kids with 0 to 3. That was super cool. It was the only time I've ever kind of come across that, but that was a major resource for a lot of families for a long time in this area for schools. So when you look back on, you know, you mentioned, Tiffany, that Sophia went to public school kind of midway through elementary age. What led to that? Did she head into your neighborhood school? Like, how did you guys work through that process?
Well, by that point, we felt like we could see as she was developing that she was ready for more academically. Mm-hmm. And the school that she was at was so heavily focused on physical development and physical activity that we just could see that it was time for her to work on her strength, you know, her mm-hmm. positive strength, which would be learning at that point. And in a way, it kind of felt like we were giving up because we knew going to the public school, she wasn't going to be able to have all of that therapy. It's just not feasible in that setting. But we just knew for her that it was time to give it a try. And because of our initial interaction with the public school close to where we lived, we ultimately moved to a different county within the area. Mm-hmm. So the school system here was much more welcoming. She went to our neighborhood school. We did go and talk to them and they met her and they were just welcomed her as if she were any other student. They didn't act surprised by everything we said like the other school did. They were like, oh, that's fine. Oh, that's okay. We can do that. And it was quite different, you know, physically and her taking her wheelchair. But for Sophia, in our case, it turned out to be the best decision because she was exposed to so much. You know, within the first week, she loved it. She knew everybody. She really enjoyed the specials like music and the library and all those things. Her little private school, although it was very expensive, did not have those opportunities for her. So it was great. It's been great ever since we transferred her to public school in that respect.
I know that part of this has to do with insurance, you know, your providers and payers and whatnot, and then also with the school system. But I'm curious, at that age and now, did Sophia receive kind of what they call traditional therapies for OT, PT, speech in the school and through Aaron's clinic, or were they separate? Because I think sometimes it gets a little bit mixed up when people, you know, trying to understand school-based therapy versus outpatient-based therapy, like medical-based. So it's the medical model versus the school-based model. Aaron, feel free to kind of jump in on that because I know that can be confusing for parents even to understand. What are the differences between seeing PT at school versus seeing a PT outside of school?
So the difference is when we're looking at school-based therapies, they are therapies where they're working on skills directly related to school activities. So are you able to interact and get from your classrooms to your other classrooms? Can you do your handwriting, your typing, whatever is necessary to function in the school classroom and environment? When we're looking at medical therapy, so like what you would do in an outpatient clinic, you are looking at more big picture, if you will. So now we can look at and address things like, oh, I need to be able to do this to manage my home environment, or I want to be able to get up and down the stairs on the playground, or, you know, they can look at things beyond just what's needed to meet your school goals and activities. So we can focus on more in the outpatient medical model of therapies.
Yeah, I think sometimes that's hard. I've seen a change even in my career. I'm not an occupational therapist, speech therapist, or physical therapist. I'm actually a recreation therapist by undergraduate and my master's in assistive technology. So that's how I got into doing AT evals in school systems. But I look at this from the standpoint of it's hard. You know, what I've seen in my career is that there has become more and more of a line, especially in this area that I've seen. I can speak for the DC metro area. And I've heard this from other therapists throughout the country that there's kind of about that harder line. I don't know if you've noticed that in your career, Erin, where like people have like, it used to be the school therapist could kind of were kind of the catch-all and did could kind of do everything. But it seems like school systems now are quoting budgetary needs, which that's neither here nor there. I don't know the answer to that. But that's what I'm hearing is that more kiddos are getting less PT and families are like really upset going, how come I'm getting less PT? They're still not walking. They're still not toileting. What is the issue? But not realizing that that could actually be something that should be addressed in more of a outpatient medical style setting.
There's definitely seems to be a harder line drawn in years of recent past. And we're seeing that when kids come to clinic that it's, oh no, I'm not getting school therapy. They discharged me from that. Or they told me I don't need it anymore. But like you said, but I still need therapy. I still can't do X, Y, or Z. But because it was adequate for what the school felt was needed to get through the school day, they no longer receive school services. Sophia, have you gotten both school and outpatient therapies?
Both school and outpatient therapies at school.
You've done both?
Done both.
Yeah.
Gotcha. I think another area to think about when we talk about school-based, I hate to say versus, but as compared to medical-based is, you know, where does that equipment line fall? That is a tricky, tricky question. We hear things like, I'd say Orlando is a relatively big-ish city area, pretty big metro area. Same with obviously where I live in here in the DC metro. But I think about my hometown of Lynchburg, Virginia. I remember this vividly. In recent years, I went down and was helping with the power mobility evaluation of a friend of mine's daughter who had SMA type 1. And when I met the physical therapist that was working with this little girl, at the time she was 2 years old. And I remember the physical therapist, when she heard my last name, she's like, Kiger, I feel like I worked with a Kiger at some point. And I said, well, the only person you would have worked with would have been my cousin who has CP. And she's like, oh, yes. I'm like, and she's 8 years older than me. And by this time, I was in my mid-30s. So I was like, wow. And she'd been practicing, you know, that long. And we kind of talked about how evolved the school systems have had and how even in Lynchburg that there's doing more of a separation. But for those smaller areas, if there's not the ability to go to somewhere like a Nemours within driving distance, there's not also a ton of like medical-based pediatric clinics. So that sometimes becomes the conundrum also. I got a little bit derailed there, but I'm curious, Tiffany, because you have somebody like Erin on your side, this could be a bit biased, but I'm curious as to maybe before you met Erin, was there any needs to Sophia's equipment that were that was managed through the school-based therapist related to her wheelchair or a walker or anything like that?
When she was very young and she was at the school before she went to elementary, they basically helped guide us with what type of seating outside of the chair, you know, seating at the table, what type of walker, what kind of functional equipment. They sort of helped us with that, but that was more in recommending things. We would still have to go through on our own and find a new motion type place to help us. Before Erin and before we had a therapist or had ever been to a seating clinic, you know, we didn't really have anyone that could help with that.
We're seeing more of that where even just in the 8.5, 9 years I've been here working at Nemours, that there is less and less being done from an evaluation and an equipment standpoint in the school system by the school therapist. I think that's largely because of how few of them there are and how many children that they're trying to serve. I find that they're being sent more to either clinics or their outpatient therapists, and less of the equipment is being managed for recommendations and trials and fittings and things in the school system.
So it's interesting. I was seeing the same trend. When I worked as a clinical educator, I traveled throughout the country. So I had the opportunity to visit various clinics and school systems, and it definitely was seeing that trend. And then lo and behold, this past May 2023, I was up at the Abilities Expo, and it's called the New York Abilities Expo, but it's held in Jersey. So out at Abilities Expo, and there was, it typically what happens at Abilities Expos, I know y'all don't have them very often down in Florida, a place that you guys can get to, but Abilities Expos are very common for therapists will go with the family to kind of like look at new equipment, kind of touch and feel. They come from like super far out. And so not to typecast people, but I knew this group as they were approaching our booth. I thought to myself, that is clearly a mom with two of her therapists and her child. Like I could just see it. And so they came right up and we started talking. And the son was probably, I'd say probably about 8 or 9 years old. He was propelling himself in a manual chair and instantly started asking questions about a power wheelchair with standing. And I'm like, oh yeah, for sure. And what I had found out was they determined that a power wheelchair with standing would be an accommodation for her child to be able to participate in school, and the school system was going to purchase it.
Oh, wow.
Blown away.
Wow.
Like, shocked. I was like, I'm sorry, what did you say? Like, I can't tell you the county, but I don't remember, but I was like, wow, okay.
I've come across some of our families who have had great schools, kind of like Sophia's, where they've worked with them really well to the point that they have purchased equipment specifically for use at school by the child. Things like standing frames. I have kids that will stand in certain classes and that is there every day, or activity chairs so that they can transition out of their seating and have a different surface. There are some good ones out there, and I love that. And I think more could and might be willing to do it. But again, it comes back to advocating for your child and yourself. And I know it's hard because you feel like you shouldn't have to work so hard to have the things that they deserve and need. But there may be opportunities that people don't realize or tap into if they don't just ask. So don't be afraid to ask for things because you never know.
For sure. And, you know, I have a few friends that are special ed teachers. Funny enough that I don't know through the industry. I feel like when you work with children, you just kind of attract also a social network of like friends. And my friend's a special ed teacher in Arlington County. And I remember she was so intimidated a couple of years ago because one of her kiddos that was coming in, a new student that she had, used a power wheelchair, had standing on it, and had a communication device. And she's like, what in the world do we do as far as like connecting all of these? Brilliant student, age appropriate. Like he was spent most of his time in the classroom. And that was the thing, that as a special ed teacher in a very well-known county, she didn't know who to call to help with the chair or anything like that. And so it happened on Friday nights, we typically hang out at our friend's house who has a pool, and we're sitting there having our adult beverages and snacks. And she's like, hey, does anybody know? And we're at the home of an OT, and then I'm over there visiting, like hanging out. So it's like, yep, we can help you with this sort of thing. It still seems like some of these things are very like village based. You just kind of, it's all in who you know and how to do those connections. There's not a book that's out there with instructions. Sophia, do you have any specialized equipment besides your power wheelchair that you use at school to help you with activities?
Computer that they provide me for school, a bathroom thing, a tram for walking in bathroom.
I'm guessing on the computer, probably some specific software would be my guess to help you with typing or using the mouse or anything like adaptive keyboards or anything, or no?
No.
It's an iPad.
Okay.
He does use the voice to transcribe rather than typing. But other than that, her classroom has always had additional students throughout the day come in for each period. And they also help the students with writing or things that they need help with.
We laugh about screen time. What a pain screen time has become for many a parents. One of my friends last night told me that she just had to put her son on a 3-hour summer schedule because he was becoming so obsessed with the video game. When we think about technology in the bad sense, but in the same sense, it really has helped. I've seen, especially in the special ed classrooms, where it's really normalized utilizing technology. It used to be kiddos who needed assistive technology in the classroom were not ostracized, but they were the different ones. Like, why do they have to? And then it kind of has turned into everybody access, you know, the same technology, which has been kind of cool to see that transition over time. So maybe screens aren't terrible, but they definitely have advantages. Sophia, as you headed to middle school, you were still in a manual chair?
Yes.
How did you use that manual chair? Was it, so there's two different types of manual chairs, one that the person like yourself would push on their own, or one that has somebody else push them? Which type did you use?
Somebody else pushes me.
So did she have a tilt in space, or was it ultralight?
Yep. You able to push yourself some.
I was able to push myself somewhat.
She did both, especially in the classroom or within a room. She navigated herself around, and they would have her push until she got tired. She did actually do both, but probably the longer distances, going from lunch to the playground to PE, someone else was
playground.
Usually, okay, not the playground. someone else was pushing her.
I don't know, as people are listening to the different voices of this podcast, you may have missed it. That was not Mom who identified that she could push herself. That was, of course, her physical therapist that was like, hold on, you could push yourself. Very PT thing to say there, Erin, to point that out. But has she ever tried Power Assist? Just curious.
We did. Mm-hmm. We tried. It sounded great. And I think it is awesome for certain people. Mm-hmm. We just really had a hard time with steering and stopping. And it was a little dangerous. And just for her, didn't really get quite the hang of it, the way you have to tap the watch. And there's all different variations of it. But the types mm-hmm. we tried, it wasn't the best, safest route for Sophia. But it is an awesome piece of equipment.
Yes, there are different types of power assist. I have seen amazing transformations in people's ability to get around and be independent. We talked a little bit about one of your favorite YouTubers, who's a friend of mine, Cole Sidner. He uses a manual wheelchair and a power wheelchair. On his manual chair, I have witnessed him. He can't propel the manual chair at all due to his level of spinal cord injury and abilities with his upper extremities. He made very, very short distances. He really needs the power assist. So I've seen situations where it's really been helpful, and other folks who've been like, it's just not the answer for me. What made you guys look into, and I guess Sophia, whose idea was it to look at a power wheelchair for you? Was it yours, your therapist, or your mom's?
Dad's.
It was dad. Dad gets credit. Dad couldn't join us today because he's on a work trip. So dad gets the credit for that. What did you think when dad said, hey, Sophia, what do you think about a power chair? Were you excited, or were you nervous or excited?
Yes.
Do you remember the first time you got to try to drive a power wheelchair?
It was cool. It was fun.
I love it. Erin, how that was the first time trying it with you?
Yes, it was.
Nice.
She did great. She picked up on it quickly, which I knew she would. We were just trying to give her more independence. Like she had said, she could propel for some short distances, and then her arms would fatigue. And as she grew and there were some physical changes, propelling was becoming more and more difficult. In order to give her full freedom in her mobility, power was brought up, and she was very excited for it. And once we put her in it and let her go, there was no turning back. But it also, on top of just the mobility, Sophia, has it been nice to be able to change your position? You can lean back to get comfortable. She can make changes on her own that she wasn't able to do in her manual chair, just so she can tolerate being upright and doing all of those things that teenagers have to do all day, every day.
So have you been to school in your power chair yet, or will this be the first year?
Yes, I've been to school.
You've been to school. What was the biggest difference going to school in your power wheelchair versus going to school in your old manual wheelchair?
Not having everybody push me around.
Not having everybody push you around. Yeah. I could see that in the literal and figurative sense. You don't like people pushing you around.
No.
What about in the classroom? Was it helpful in the classroom too?
Yes.
Can you think of any specific ways of how it was helping you while you were sitting in class?
Like I could get my own things if I wanted to.
Yeah, you don't have to ask a fellow student, a teacher, an aide, or anything. You could just drive over and get it.
Yeah.
Her chair raises up as well, so she's able to change the height to reach things that are taller. And Sophia, I don't know if you want to tell them what you were really excited about getting the power chair for, to be able to do out on the track.
Yeah, I liked racing my friends.
Now she had more speed.
Yes.
That makes sense. One of my favorite stories of all time, I don't know if you guys follow, there's a blogger or social media person out there, it's another personal friend of mine, is Corey Lee. If you follow Curb Free with Corey Lee, he is a world traveler. He's super, super cool. And his mom tells the funniest story. So Corey's in his 30s now, Sophia. When he was about 4 or 5 years old, he has SMA type 2. They decided that, you know, it was time for him to drive a power wheelchair. Mom was a bit nervous. And then all of a sudden she noticed that he was coming home from school with pockets full of quarters. And she was asking, like, Corey, where are you getting these quarters from? You're in, you know, kindergarten, first grade. What is happening? He started charging his fellow students 25 cents to ride on his power wheelchair. Their ice cream money. And so I'm like, Corey, you have been an entrepreneur your entire life.
Oh, that's great.
That's a great idea.
Yeah. It's so normalized, like him having a power chair, which was super right. cool. Tiffany, as Sophia has continued to move up through schools, each time you're heading to either a new school or into a new school year, what are some of the things from the parental standpoint that you and your husband are just prepared for as far as like educating and things that you look for or that you've learned to look for beginning of each school year when it comes to accessing the classroom?
Well, it really depends on the teacher and how willing the teacher and the assistants are and what the school is able to provide. Safety is always a huge concern, especially with the power chair now. She does like to go fast, and I'm always worried about a curb or being near stairs and maybe not always paying attention. Just making sure that these people are really aware of the safety aspect. It's mm-hmm. easy for other people to sometimes look at her and feel like she's got all under control, which she usually does, but she's like any other yes. kid. Sometimes she's on her phone when she's driving. And if she's not paying attention, she can flip off a curb with a 400-pound chair. So just really making sure that the staff is aware that you really have to make sure that safety is a priority and make sure they understand and hear out all of our concerns about where she may need extra help. Just meeting them in person and talking to them.
Erin, as you think about in your clinic, as you're helping folks get prepared to go back to school, what are some of the tips and tricks that you go over with families about getting prepared for new school year?
You're staying in the same school with the same people. It's a little easier because you're already familiar with the environment. So you know who's at the school, you know the people to talk to, who to make sure that you're set up for success. The biggest challenges, I think, lie when you're either moving to a new school or transitioning from elementary to middle to high school. I like to talk with families about being aware of your new campus. Are we moving to a bigger school? Are there greater distances we're going to have to travel between classrooms? Are we moving to more classrooms? Elementary school, you kind of tend to stay in your one little space. Middle school, you may start changing classrooms. And then high school, you're on a huge campus and you're moving to seven different rooms throughout the day. And then the cafeteria, the gym, does your mobility device meet that need? Are you going to be able to get everywhere you need to get? If it's younger kids, what is your playground surface look like? Are you able to access it? Can we make sure that you have tools to be able to play and interact with your friends and your classmates? Do I need to go visit my school and see what does it look like? Mm-hmm. Have a talk before school starts, if possible. Hey, I see that there's stairs. Is my classroom going to be upstairs? How am I going to access that? Do you have an elevator that's reliable? Do you have a plan to get me out in the case of an emergency?
That's a major one. So, Tiffany, do you guys ever go over that? Because that's a major one that I would see that happen in the school system that I consulted in, DC Public Schools, is that very old buildings, they're like, yes, we have an elevator. I'm like, that's excellent. So your special education classroom's on the third floor. Say there's a fire. Like, how are we going to evacuate? Do you guys go over that?
We have the school that she was at for middle did have two stories, but she didn't ever have anything upstairs. So that was a concern of mine. How are we going to get her up and down? She did have a one-on-one assistant, and there was a male assistant in the classroom too. And he was.
I do have an elevator for high.
There will be elevators at the high school. Yes. Mm-hmm. I have been worried about that, not only for an emergency, but also all the drills they do. And I've heard stories of kids getting left behind just for a regular fire drill, you know, being scared and left alone. And so I've heard of schools also in the area have moved their special classroom down to the first floor, swapped with someone, just which makes more sense.
Yes, I can say it. My husband is a teacher, you know, in our local school system, and they actually did that. They had several kids and they ended up moving. His classroom was one of them. They moved the teachers so that everybody was on the first floor so that the child in the wheelchair was not having to go upstairs or manage that. So it did alleviate those problems. But it's still just something to be aware of because that can't always be done. You know, if that's not an option, just making sure that families talk to the school to know what the plan is. Make sure you're comfortable with that plan and that there is a plan because people don't always think about things.
And for all of the drills, I mean, I haven't been in school since 1996 and I graduated Parent High School, but all of the drills now, I know that, you know, definitely we don't need to talk politics or the scary things that happen in schools, but Erin, I'm sure your husband's school, they go through various types of drills. So making sure that there is a plan for your child that has a mobility impairment is absolutely vital because I'll never forget, you know, I had somebody explain to me, oh yeah, we know how to do this in a case of emergency. And I'm like, an emergency can literally happen anytime. That's why they're called accidents. That's why they're called emergencies. So being prepared is vital. We're working on wrapping this podcast up. I'm trying to think if there's any other last minute advice. Tiffany, anything for a mom of any age or a dad that's about ready to send their child to school with a physical disability who needs a wheelchair? Any, you know, words of wisdom?
Well, as I said before, safety is always a huge concern and a fear of mine, all the possible things falling out of the wheelchair, making sure that someone's going to be overseeing that. And also speaking to the teacher about positioning, you know, sitting in a chair all day long is a long time to be sitting and finding out if there's possible ways that you can change position throughout the day and making sure that if they aren't able to tell you, kind of checking in to see if they look uncomfortable. So I guess really making the teacher and the therapist your best friend at the school so you can have just ongoing communication about, you know, how they're doing and if things need to be changed.
Absolutely. Erin, any last minute thoughts from you on advice for first timers headed to school in a wheelchair?
Just being open to, you know, your kid having the best experience possible. You know, interact with the school, have conversations, don't be afraid to ask for what you need. And there may be different tools for different times. Don't let a wheelchair sound scary. Kids can walk in a classroom, use a chair to get between classrooms or on and off the bus, be on the floor at other times. It's okay to have all of the options so that everyone can be successful.
Absolutely. I'm hoping this podcast will gain some good traction. Maybe we'll get some special ed teachers on or general ed teachers. We're going to blast this out everywhere because we, you know, really want people to understand this. For those of you guys who listen to the podcast consistently, or we'll kind of do a teaser, Erin's actually going to come back and we're going to do more of a focused on different types of equipment, different obstacles or barriers, some ideas for things to look at, kind of go in depth, inside, outside, transportation. Some advice to folks on that, or just some experience sharing, we'll say, with Erin and hopefully another therapist we're going to have on here. So that'll be fun to talk about too. I think that wraps up this episode. Sophia, thank you so much for joining us. I hope your first podcast experience was fun. Maybe we'll have you back on again. Just wait till you hear it on the actual like podcast. My nieces love to listen to it. Tiffany, thank you. And Erin, thank you. Appreciate all of y'all's time.
Absolutely.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you for listening to Wheelchair Nerds, presented by Permobil. Today's episode was brought to you by...
Enhanced your manual wheelchair experience with Smart Drive MX2 Plus and Speed Control Dial. With this intuitive power assist device, you can start, stop, and change your speed on the go with ease. Smart Drive can reduce up to 81% of manual wheelchair pushes and may help decrease repetitive stress injuries. Installation is easy and takes less than 5 minutes. Pair your Smart Drive with an Apple Watch or the Push Tracker E3 for even more control options. Power your push with Smart Drive and the Speed Control Dial from Permobil.
Thanks for checking out this episode. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss a single one. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Our handle is @WheelchairNerds. And tell your friends about our podcast too. Oh, and we really appreciate it if you'd give us a 5-star rating and leave a comment sharing what your favorite thing about Wheelchair Nerds is. Last but not least, if you have a topic you'd like us to discuss or know a great guest, hey, it could even be you. You could be that next great guest. Send us an email. Tell us why. You can reach us at wheelchairnerds@permobil.com or DM us on one of our social platforms. We love hearing from you.